Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another day here at the Damage Report. Another day. What am I talking about? Like it's any random day. It's not a random day. It's a Wednesday. And J.R. Jackson, what are those?
What did I do?
What Wednesdays are?
Oh, I thought you said what are those? I was like, I don't have any shoes on.
Oh, no. No. We've got a big news Wednesday for you. That's what we've got, though.
Yeah, every time big news Wednesday. Let's make it happen. How you guys doing? By the way, John, I saw you eating beforehand, like we usually do, and we've talked about this before. John has very specific eating habits, and you know what, man? I'm on board, bro. I'm on board.
Okay.
Let's do it. It's a big news Wednesday. We gotta have our Pop Tarts to get our energy up. No more sweet tarts.
No more sweet tarts. It's still tarts though. He's got a specific sort of type of food. So JR is referring to the fact that I was eating oatmeal because TYT dropped off a ton of food. So I'm gonna be eating oatmeal for the next 6 months. And I really like it. There was a period where I used to make overnight steel cut oats for a long time. This is not that, but it's good. And he's eating the Pop Tarts. But the thing is, the joke's on him because I've also eaten Pop Tarts today. Because I've eaten oatmeal doesn't mean I didn't also eat that, other stuff that I'm not gonna list because it paints a really bad picture if you knew all that I'd eaten today. But anyway, JR, thank you for being here. We've said that it's a big news Wednesday. I think, look, the weirdness, the insanity is big. The danger coming to a number of states is certainly big. So I think that this is gonna qualify. The only thing I wanna take issue with is that you chose blueberry.
Oh my God, that's like the next one after cherry. By the way, cherry is in the cupboard. So
lump those.
It's definitely in house. What are you talking? Wait, what are you supposed to lump it with? S'mores or something? What, the cinnamon sugar one?
Cherry's top tier. Well, that's the best. No, the thing for me is that maybe it was just the schools I grew up in, but like they would have strawberry, blueberry. That's it. And so as a kid, I burned myself out on those and couldn't take any more. You're falling for nostalgia.
I'm new to the game. I might as well get in on the ground floor.
Okay. Well, I'll give you some of the limited edition ones soon. Anyway, thank you everybody for joining us. This is a daily rundown of basically all of the breaking news having to do with Pop-Tarts. And so we appreciate you being here. Please hit the like button and share the stream if you haven't already, because we got a lot that we're gonna be going through. And as we do that, you can send us comments, whether on YouTube or Twitch, super chats, tweets, whatever. You wanna duet with us on TikTok? I'll get the notifications. I'll see that you did it. There were some great ones yesterday. I did a TikTok about Texas. Anyway, with that, why don't we launch into this thing? Hey, everybody, the pandemic's over, at least according to a couple of states, red states. That's Greg Abbott over there. He's the governor of Texas, and apparently everything's cool in Texas because yesterday he tweeted, "I just announced Texas is 100% open. Everything." I also ended the statewide mask mandate. So I don't know, it almost seems like a guy who's confessing his crimes. But the thing is that we live in a country where what he's doing, although it will kill far more people than even the most ambitious serial killer could ever expect to be able to pile up, everything he's doing is legal, I guess. And so that's what's happening. And it's not just Texas, although we will be focusing on Texas. Shortly after that announcement, Governor Tate Reeves announced that he would end Mississippi's statewide mask mandate, effective Wednesday of this week, so like now. And look, Greg Abbott said that the reason that they could do this is because they are at a 4-month low in Texas for cases, hospitalizations, and deaths, which is good to see those numbers go down. They're still not great nationally though. So let's take a look at the most recent numbers. You can see there that tests are regrettably lower, and we'll talk more about that. Cases have certainly been falling, but the fall has kind of stopped. And you'll note that the number of cases per day, which has stopped falling, is still as high as that second peak was. And you know what we did nationally right around then is we started reopening. And you know what happened after that? A whole lot of people died in places like Texas. In Texas alone, JR, 44,353 people have died in just
Texas alone.
Texas. And up until now, because now they're reopening 100%. 100%, everything reopened, full capacity, no masks, all of that.
So I'm curious, because I'm not in Texas, obviously, what percentage were they open before the 100%? Because I wonder what was left closed, because you know, I'm sure it wasn't to the degree in California. I'm seeing many people that live, you know, Florida or whatever other states, and they're hitting the gym, and I was like, wow, gyms are open in certain states. This is amazing to me. And it just, you know, mask wearing, but in the gym. And I was like, yeah, I think I would still avoid it, but it's up to them. But so I wonder what's left. What was the things in Texas that were like, okay, we can't open those though. I mean, bars were open in certain states way earlier too. So was bars the last realm? What was the last hurdle that Texas had to reach to get to 100 with all capitals, everything? What's the last thing that people were still clamoring to get into without their mask to make sure they breathe and spit on each other?
Yeah, that's a good question. I will also say that, by the way, we're focusing on the new states that are like fully reopening, but there are other states, including states that are governed by Democrats, that are not, they're not fully reopened. They're not like doing anything like that, but they are a good bit reopened. I mean, even you can go and you can, in LA, you can get COVID outside of Denny's right now if you want. Like, we're still somewhat reopened if you want. And so the thing for me is that it would be one thing if this was a natural response to the numbers going down, if I thought it was actually being driven by that. Even then, it wouldn't be as good as, say, waiting a month or two so that significantly more people will have the vaccine available. This feels to me like the door is closing on COVID deaths. Let's just see how many more we can get. Come on. Oh, we're almost losing our opportunity. We gotta get some more deaths. But it's the way he announced it. Can we briefly, I apologize, Brandon. Can we go briefly back to the tweet? Everything. I also ended the statewide mask mandate. That feels to me like he wants credit for it. It's not that it's objectively the best thing. He just wants to be the guy who did it. 100%. Damn the deaths. Who cares about the cases?
That's what I did it. Like. Yeah. Okay. So obviously, because of that nature, which is the first thing I think everyone should notice about these tweets and the way that Governor Abbott went about it, this is a political move. So they always talk about how stop politicizing COVID. Stop politicizing COVID. You talk about deaths. You talk about testing. You talk about getting the numbers down. You talk about mask mandates. You talk about businesses closing. You talk about relief bills. And you talk about people out of work. All that stuff. Let's stop politicizing COVID. So when we talk about actually helping people. Mass numbers of Americans, that's politicizing COVID. But announcing that you're releasing all restrictions, upping all mask mandates, and opening up everything with a tweet that says, I just did this, I will do this, I also did that. That is a campaign style politicizing of an event to make sure that you are the one. I remember his favorite president, Donald Trump, said, I alone can do it. This is the kind of talk and rhetoric this is. It's me, it's me, it's me. I, you guys know it's me, right? You know, when Texas was in that deep freeze and then nothing was being done and then all of the power sources were unprepared for the event. Did you see the governor come out going, I did this. It was me. I'm the one who was overseeing this. I'm the one who took campaign contributions and donations from large corporations and let them do whatever the hell they want. Was he saying that then? Because it was definitely him then too. So it's very calculated and talking about who, what they're going to openly and boastfully take credit for. And if this doesn't work out, which I hope it does, let's keep it real.
Yeah.
I hope people don't die in Texas over this and that they were right and that they can open up completely and then the numbers don't go up. It's just science doesn't really lead to that direction. And also previous history just from last year doesn't really make us believe that that's going to happen. But is he going to take credit then if things go wrong? Well, we haven't seen him do that yet.
No, nor will he have to, because I mean, do they hate Trump for all the deaths? Like, why do they hate him? Anyway, yeah. I hope that somehow, against all reason, this doesn't lead to an increase in cases. That would be great for a few reasons. One, because they're humans and I don't want them to die. Two, because I have family in Texas and lived in Texas for a number of years. And also, like, let's also acknowledge. He's like, well, we don't need all of this. We can still exercise personal responsibility. But can you really? So like, I'm not gonna name names, but I know that, so the schools are totally reopened. And they say that kids can't give you COVID even though they totally can and they can COVID themselves. So they're not vaccinating all the teachers. I know a teacher in Texas who's gonna have to be there and I'm sure he's gonna wear a mask, but he's still gonna be constantly surrounded by dozens and dozens of people that might be giving him COVID and he has to be there or else he loses his job. So like what is personal responsibility in that case? Is he supposed to stop his career? I don't know. I have another prediction though. In addition to the prediction that this is almost certainly gonna lead to more cases and more deaths, I guarantee that when it does, someone on Fox News, probably Tucker Carlson, will do a segment about how, hey, Biden said we should all wear masks. It was his dictate from the top and yet cases are going up. Why is that? Cool. And he'll pretend to not understand that a bunch of Republican governors are prematurely reopening. And not just Republican governors, I'll remind you again, but they are the most out front about it.
Let's draw that parallel too, because remember, and this is a completely different issue, but they could still use that type of playbook. When Obamacare was out, and then all of the states had to accept the Medicaid exchanges and make sure that they took in the money. Many of those states, Republican states, rejected it. And it made it worse. It made their healthcare situation worse. It made Obamacare much more ineffective in their state. And after that happened, they look at Obamacare failing in my state. Bro, you gotta accept it. You can't reject the aspects of it and then say, oh, how dare this not work? Look at this bad plan. Yeah, the bad plan was leaving it up to you to accept the parts that would be helpful. That was the bad part of the plan. So the same way in this, just like you were saying, though things will go badly or could go badly. And if they do, then we're gonna go ahead and blame the Biden administration for what they did somehow unrelated to this, because no one has to think clearly, no one has to have a real direct line of thought process anymore. It just doesn't matter.
Exactly. Now, really just a couple other little tidbits of news that you should know that could play into this. There are of course more contagious variants of the virus that are circulating in the country. That has the potential to push case counts upwards. So it's a great time to just tell everyone to go out there and not wear masks anymore. Also, testing has fallen 30% in recent weeks, which is both objectively bad, but also when you have new COVID variants ripping their way through America, you probably want to be doing more testing to track that down as quickly as possible rather than less. And I also want to read one quote from the director of the CDC who said, please hear me clearly. At this level of cases with variants spreading, we stand to completely lose the hard-earned ground we have gained.
Every time.
Yeah, we still have like 60,000 cases a day. Do we want an April with 100,000 deaths? Because this is how you get an April with 100,000 deaths. I hope against, again, all reason that that doesn't happen. But if the Republican governors in Texas and Mississippi are doing this, other Republican governors are gonna wanna get on that gravy train. They're gonna be pushing for full reopenings.
A big state like Texas starting this, and we see how Mississippi followed suit, and that's exactly the way it could work. Now let's think about it also. My last thought on this. This is the way just humans are. You don't have to be a lib or a conservative or a red and blue state person, any of this stuff, to just be a human, especially an American right now. And we just kind of go with the flow of how things feel. It's like traffic. If everybody's speeding and you're kind of going with the flow, next thing you know, you're going 80 miles an hour, you're like, whoa, I didn't know I was going this fast. But everyone is kind of relaxed. I've relaxed in some of the things I was doing last April, not completely, but there's some things that I don't do as like everything my finger has touched. I'm gonna make sure that that's in my pocket, all that type of stuff, you know? But in general, if you're releasing all of these restrictions and saying wide open, everything's back to normal, human nature is, even when they're not at the grocery store, whenever they're not going to the gym, people are just gonna be like, everything is fine again. Hey, everything has been lifted. And it just becomes a normal routine. So it doesn't always necessarily have to be directed at the shops and restaurants they go to, just their everyday daily lives and interacting with each other. It could be a problem.
Yeah.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
You know, this is sort of good news. Someone taking personal responsibility to make sure that kids aren't exposed to things that might predispose them to think, you know, things that are toxic and not compatible with a modern society. Six Dr. Seuss books will no longer be published because of their use of offensive imagery, according to the business that oversees the estate of the children's author and illustrator. We're gonna give you all the details. But first off, just a first glance. This, so far as I can tell, is not the result of some massive campaign. The company is choosing to do this. And why? What's the offensive content? Well, Dr. Seuss Enterprises said that it had decided last year to end publication and licensing of the books, including the first book that Dr. Seuss wrote under that name, and To Think That I Saw It on Mulberry Street, If I Ran the Zoo as well. And then things like McElliott's Pool, On Beyond Zebra, Scrambled Egg Super, which I've never read, and The Cat's Quizzer. So why? What's in there? Well, in And To Think That I Saw It on Mulberry Street, a character described as a Chinaman has lines for eyes, wears a pointed hat, and carries chopsticks and a bowl of rice. Editions published in the 1970s changed the reference from a Chinaman to a Chinese man, one of the early instances of cancel culture, they would say. In If I Ran the Zoo, two characters from the African island of Yurka are depicted as shirtless, shoeless, and resembling monkeys. But really fast, like you won't be able to see these very soon in the actual books, so they won't be published. But I want you to know what we're talking about here. So this is just two images from If I Ran a Zoo. So here is the depiction of Asians. And then here is the actual one from the African island of Yurka. These are not edge cases. These are not sort of questionable. These are, if you had Steve Bannon draw different races, this is what he would produce. If what Tucker Carlson dreams is those images. This is the most explicit racialized stereotypes you can imagine. And we're gonna have more on this, but JR, what do you think about their decision to stop selling these books?
I avoid tweeting sometimes just because it's a bit of a tiring exercise. But I was gonna point out yesterday when all this was going down and people were upset, canceling Dr. Seuss. I have a 9-year-old kid, and then as he was a lot younger, I read a lot more Dr. Seuss to him, and he was reading it and stuff. I've got the Mulberry Street one, and I think the Zoo one. I already have them. They're there. People who love Dr. Seuss and love all the things that he did, and the stories and the childhood memories of reading it when you were growing up, you still have the books. So calm down, number one. Number two, Dr. Seuss, his long, long decomposed corpse does not care about whether or not you're canceling him, because death canceled him much, much longer ago than you can ever imagine. So it's okay, it's fine. He's already gone. He's not sitting there mad about this situation. So you have the books
30 years
already.
Ago.
Yeah, and if you want to go ahead and be upset, but to make this some kind of thing like somebody's coming after Dr. Seuss when he came after people then, I don't get it. What's gonna happen if your kid then realizes that an author from some books, that some of the things that they read that they enjoyed and maybe learned some kind of reading literature from, that they got that and they can still know that author wrote and authorized horrible things. That's fine. What's your kid gonna do now? Or if your kid doesn't learn about Dr. Seuss, that's fine too, because there's children that haven't learned about Dr. Seuss and they're fine. It's just, the outrage over this is way overblown. It's fine. What's gonna happen to you if six of his books, not all of his books, six of his books that have explicit racial overtones in them are not gonna be published anymore? That's a problem now.
Yeah, there'll still be plenty. I personally think one additional thing that it doesn't seem like anyone has considered this option. Why not change the books? Why not like, do different art and different characterizations and stuff? Like update them. Why not update them? There's new Dr. Seuss stuff being made. Look what Jim Carrey did. Like I mean, there's stuff that's being done. But anyway, you pointed out, you know, people who already love it already have the books. And if you didn't buy them up until now, you didn't really love it.
Exactly.
I will also say some people don't think they don't get what the big deal is. They look at that and they don't get how it's offensive. And I can say from my own personal history, I read many of these books growing up, including some of these ones. And I never got how offensive it was. And that's the problem.
Exactly.
I was a kid being given these books and thinking, oh, this is totally acceptable. There's no problem with this. That's not good. That's not, no, you don't want that. And so like absent, you know, and then, by the way, they also, the right, and we're gonna get into the right soon, they don't like disclaimers either. So if you added a page to this book that said, hey, some of this imagery and characterization totally offensive now from a new, you know, like a modern sensibility. So, you know, bear that in mind, they would hate that too. So the issue fundamentally is that they don't have a problem with racism. That is the only actual explanation for what they're doing.
Absolutely.
But really fast, JR, in terms of what he did and what he thought, it's interesting because before he was a giant of children's literature, the author known as Dr. Seuss, he drew political cartoons, including some that had stereotypes caricaturing Japanese and Japanese Americans. Decades later, he said he was embarrassed by the cartoons, which he said were full of snap judgments that every political cartoonist has to make. And so he was embarrassed. So in theory, he's in support of not continuing some of these things.
Well, I mean, you know, Dr. Seuss apparently was, he's been taken over by the left in this country. They pressured him in his grave to speak out against this. No, it's the way it always is. They'll take many people, especially ones who aren't here, and give them their own voice and tell them what they really would have believed and how they would have felt about things. By the way, this isn't like a one-off thing. Plenty of cartoonists and cartoons and things became political statements that were very racist, very based on all these things, especially in the 40s when we were fighting world wars. That's the way it was. This propaganda push to make sure that we have this disdain for certain people that we're fighting against. It's just the way it was. I mean, if you didn't know that, just take a cursory search. Read a little bit. You know who else has been canceled?
Looney Tunes.
Bugs Bunny's been canceled. Tom and Jerry has been canceled. Because guess what was in those a lot of times? Racial overtones that when something exploded in someone's face, they end up looking like a dark, charred human being with big lips. That happened in all those cartoons. And if you turn on Cartoon Network, a boomerang right now, and you find yourself some old Bugs Bunny cartoons, they won't have those episodes on there. They have the other ones on there, or the ones that had those, they edit out those parts. Was it canceled? That's been happening since I was a kid. So is this a new cancel culture thing, or is this just eliminating absolute disgusting racism in old cartoons that were the sign of the time? You could even write off as that if you'd like. Oh, it's just the way people thought. It was something that we just did. We didn't realize how bad it was. Fine, say all that stuff, but don't show it to me now. And if you want to find it, you can go find the racial stuff. You can go find it. It's perfectly fine. One more thing. If you watch, like, I don't know, like, Coming to America, I'm thinking of a couple of Eddie Murphy movies from the 80s. And they have some nudity scenes in them every once in a while where boobs are out. Those things are cut out if you're watching it on TNT. Is that getting canceled? No, the explicit parts of these movies that we don't want to see or want our kids to catch and see are eliminated from the movies. Crazy how that works.
JR, I remember the first time, and it wasn't that long ago, that I watched Trading Places like on Amazon. I was like, I did not realize these scenes were
never in here. Seen the real movie. You've never seen every scene.
And I've seen that movie 1,000 times. So absolutely. Anyway, before we move to the next section, I just wanted to briefly remind people that because as JR pointed out, he did this political stuff. Here's one cartoon that the right is not like, how dare they cancel him? In which Dr. Seuss implied that there was like that the America Firsters and the Nazis shared a beard. I don't know. I think that's interesting. Here's what the stats show. Of the 2,240 identified human characters across 50 different Dr. Seuss books, 2,240, there are 45 characters of color. That is 2% of the total number of human characters. But as I continue, you'll probably end up wishing that it had been lower than 2%, because of the 45 characters, 43 exhibited behaviors and appearances that align with harmful and stereotypical or Orientalist tropes. The remaining two human characters are identified in the text as African, and both align with the theme of anti-blackness. It's also important to note that each of the non-white characters is male, all of them, and they are all presented in subservient, exotified, or dehumanized roles, especially in their relation to white characters. There is no non-white female character in any of the books, and maybe it's for the best that there wasn't, because God only knows what it would have looked like.
Yeah.
Anyway, that is fascinating. And as a kid, I didn't notice that, and that's the problem.
And a kid that doesn't notice it, that isn't told about what reality is, will grow up lacking a complete entire realm of reality. It's just, and then we call those people conservatives. Sorry, I'm sorry, that's too far.
Oh my God.
I take it back.
Okay. The right knows that there's a crisis in America, and you need to understand how dangerous everything that's going on is. And that crisis is that Dr. Seuss has been canceled, but not really. Like his own estate decided it, and it's just 6 books and they're still out there. But anyway, they have lost their ever loving minds over this thing. So it's been tracked quite a bit. Liz Power tweeted, it's just 10 a.m. and Fox News has already had 8 segments on Dr. Seuss, quite literally being canceled, which of course he was not, and that's not actually a thing. You can see in one of those pictures, by the way, they had Madison Cawthorn on, a guy who is facing multiple accusations of sexual harassment and sexual assault. They didn't bring up any of that. Instead, they just asked them about Dr. Seuss. Then later on, their straight news shows talked about how the Biden White House was dodging questions on Dr. Seuss. Yeah, why did Joe Biden cancel Dr. Seuss? That's a good question. They had experts on to talk about it later on. And then this morning, they're still doing it. Aaron Rupar is tracking there. It's again another full news cycle. They implied that people are being silenced by Universal Orlando evaluating a Seuss-themed area, which I've been to. I don't think that it has any of the crazy racism, but maybe I missed a section. And then they've had, like, I just want to give you a sampling of the conversation, because this is the only thing happening in America from their point of view. The pandemic's not a big issue. Texans are perfectly fine. Don't worry about any of that stuff. Here they go.
Going forward,
and that out of control, like, what a radical organization decides to put together and eliminate children's books from a brilliant author that has helped spread the word of reading and the love of reading around the globe. And we're going to let one group decide that it's not worthy of our eyes and our kids. That's a travesty. You got to put the brakes on.
Well, people are too scared. They don't want to be involved in all of this, so they'd rather just cancel it all. And listen,
gotta stand for something.
Well, the places we will go, the places we are going in this country right now.
JR.
The places we will go. Okay, so this is why they need a little bit of, I guess, effective pushback. So show each of those idiots pictures of the things in these books.
Yes.
Do you like this? Hey, why do you like this? I can't remember any of the names. Steve. Why you like any of those, Brian? Hey, Brian, do you love this image of these two depicted black people carrying some weird creature with a super long neck on their shoulders because that's what they're there for? Hey, what do you love about that? Hey, how often do you teach your kids, if you have any, about this image? Do you tell them, hey, when you go outside and you see black folks, that's who they are? Is that what you do? Because if you do, I don't want to have anything to do with you. In fact, you're a disgrace to this country. Why is it? It's of course, that's why they have their conversations in their own enclosed circles there, so they don't have any kind of pushback like this, so that the other obvious side of this discussion is absolutely not had. It's just, oh, look at them canceling Dr. Seuss again. Is this, are you saying that's all Dr. Seuss was, right? Because you said this is all that has to do with anything, because he's been canceled. You can't find anything of Dr. Seuss ever again. And the love of reading just doesn't exist without Dr. Seuss. There's no other author in the world but Dr. Seuss. Hey, my child, if he doesn't read Dr. Seuss, he just doesn't know how to read. Shut up. I'm so tired of this.
No, it's a devastating point. How cowardly of them that they will talk about this for multiple days in a row. And I bet they will never actually show those images. And if they do show those images, they will never have I'm trying to remember her name. I don't remember. Oh. There's Ducey, there's Kilmeade, and
oh, there's Nasi. It's contagious.
I don't remember her name. But anyway, I barely remember Kilmeade. Sometimes I call him Gutfeld. Anyway, they will never say, there's the image. Here's why I think our kids need to still see this with no added context. They will never actually do that because they are cowards. They want to talk about this as some sort of example of cancel culture, but never actually engage with why that's what we should be teaching kids.
Absolutely.
Instead of just other Dr. Seuss books, which we could be teaching them. You know, books that, for instance, focus on like being opposed to like, you know, military escalation and things like that. I doubt they'd actually want us to focus on that. No, they'll just speak in incredibly generalized terms hour after hour after hour without saying anything. It's the sort of situation Dr. Seuss would have written about, actually. And I just tweeted, I think one of the reasons they're so, like, they can't get past this is, like, it's like a 50-50 chance that that's the last books that Kilmeade read, honestly. Like, he doesn't have anything else to go to except Dr. Seuss. They certainly haven't read Harry Potter because it's about witchcraft. But anyway, yeah, no, it's there are serious issues in America, both the crises, but then also discussions about how we can maybe solve them and strengthen the American working class. So, do they want to do 48 hours of conversation around raising the minimum wage? No, they don't want to do that because they don't want it raised. But their audience probably does. A good number of them do, and they don't want to tell their audience what they don't want to hear. And so instead, they talk about this for 2 days. And you can expect that they're going to do this for a solid 4 years. There's going to be no discussion of any of the actual problems having to do with economic inequality, access to health insurance, student loan debt, the housing crisis, any of those things, because they don't have solutions for those things. So they'll just talk about the Muppets or whatever.
But when it comes to policy, they're definitely going to pin things on Biden for even considering. Like, look at this
lib progressive. They're pinning this on Biden.
Exactly. Look at this lib progressive administration canceling people. He has nothing to do with this. And then, by the way, when 80% of the things he does do are going to fall in line with what these guys on Fox would like for him to do, they're not going to talk about it. That's why they have to fill it with things like this. Because unless you're upset about something he's doing, and in many cases, he won't be doing those things that you would get upset about, you got to find something else to get upset about with him over. Because policy ain't going to cut it. I mean, when Democrats go engage in more wars, when Democrats continue to screw the working people over, you don't see Fox going, look at the Biden administration screwing over workers again. No, they're not going to do that because they agree with that part. They got to find something, and this is just enough.
Yeah. Someone, the Bear's Den says, imagine if Biden had been wearing a tan suit. He should wear a tan suit. Let's see if we can make them do a full night's news on it. Anyway, yeah. Some Dr. Seuss stuff is perfectly fine. I think that they could probably come out with new versions of those other books, and maybe they will, in fact. And if they don't, you know what there is in the world? Other kids' books, including by authors other than Dr. Seuss, including by non-white authors.
Crazy.
Maybe we can teach our kids about some of them. Maybe they have something to say.
Those children's authors don't use words though in their books. They just they don't.
Neera Tanden, who was the nominee to head up the OMB under the Biden administration, has been withdrawn. Technically, she withdrew herself because that's always how they do this. But her withdrawal marks the first high profile defeat of one of Biden's nominees. 13 of the 23 cabinet nominees requiring Senate approval have been confirmed, most with strong bipartisan support. Acknowledge though that we're more than a month in and he still has like half of a cabinet. And by the way, some people, including Josh Hawley, the reasonable guy that the left should try to work with because he's a populist, has voted against every single one of Biden's nominees. But he says it's not because of some sort of knee-jerk opposition. All of them were on the merits. Every one of them, randomly on the merits, he found unacceptable. But anyway, here is what Neera Tanden had to say. Unfortunately, it now seems clear that there is no path forward to gain confirmation. And I do not want continued consideration of my nomination to be a distraction from your other priorities. She wrote this in a letter to Biden. The president in a statement said he has the utmost respect for her record of accomplishment, her experience, her counsel, her Twitter activity, I'm joking, and pledged to find her another role in his administration. And I get it, but like nothing says uniquely qualified to head up the OMB like, we'll just find you some other position. But anyway, I get it. They wanted in the administration. JR, what do you think about the fact that she actually did end up getting beaten?
Yeah, I don't know why. I feel like things should always come to its full conclusion. And maybe that's just the way politics works in this country, and you can't just actually see the results of the process. Hey, if enough people are gonna vote against Neera Tanden, have the vote. I never understood why we have a vote before we have the vote. Isn't that what the vote is for? To have the vote? Not to talk about having the vote before we have the vote so we can determine who's not gonna vote for you. And then after we determine that, we just don't have the vote that we're trying to have. It's so ridiculous. Have the vote and let people be on record saying what they wanna say and what they wanna. How they want to vote on Neera Tanden. Instead, we have this weird back and forth where Neera Tanden has to put out a statement acting like she made the decision to withdraw her name from this, when in reality, the administration did, because it's not going to work out. And they need her to say, hey, Mr. Biden, I think I should pull my nomination because it just doesn't look like it's going to work out. And then Biden has to respond and go, hey, yeah, you're right, Neera. It doesn't seem that way. I accept it. And you have great expertise. Let's stop with this back and forth. You weren't gonna get it. We panned for it. We looked for it. You tried to campaign for it. It didn't work. Just say that. Have the vote and let them finish it off. It's a waste of time to me to have these weird back and forth letters between two people who are trying to work together. Why are they having back and forth letters like they have no contact? Like they're writing a letter from Albany and has to get sent all the way to St. Louis or something. It's so weird. I'm horseback. I don't know.
It's all about the image. We have to manage the damage. It looks bad for them. So let's make it as if she decided. No, she, I'm sure. And by the way, look, am I a personal fan of Neera Tanden? Obviously not. But she wants the position. I get that. She doesn't want to pull out. She was told to pull out, I'm sure. And probably told, do this and we'll find you some other position or whatever. The fact that it was so focused on her tweets, I think was a little bit weird. I personally think that many of the policies that she's championed would have been a better reason to not support her for OMB. It seems like sort of a dodge to make it about the Twitter activity as if Republicans give a damn about people being rude on social media. And by the way, I say that as a leftist, and there's almost no one she was more aggressively like virulent towards online than progressives. But I don't know, that sort of seems weird, that being the reason for it.
it's easier to convey, because you know, we know we're in this hyper angry state in the country, which people say that's the way it is now. It's the way it's always been. But anyway, we're in this hyper angry state right now. So then, yeah, it's easy to say, hey, look at her tweets, because people are, that's palatable. But if you say, hey, look at her policies, look who she spoke with, look who funded her, which of course, establishment Democrats nor Republicans will say any of that, because then you can start implementing any of them for the same things. So they won't do that. They have to go for the things that the majority of people look at and go, ew, that's right. When in reality, there's far worse things that she had done.
Totally. It's sort of like how apparently like a bunch of Republicans in Texas hate Ted Cruz now, but it's because he left for Cancun rather than because he supported overthrowing American democracy. And so like, I guess whatever gets you there, but it seems weird that it was this one. But that said, it was pretty entertaining. So why don't we go to a quick little reminder of the back and forth that was had over her social media activity.
You wrote that Susan Collins is, quote, the worst, that Tom Cotton is a fraud, that vampires have more heart than Ted Cruz. You called Leader McConnell Moscow Mitch and Voldemort, and on and on. I wonder specifically, how do you plan to mend fences and build relationships with members of Congress you have attacked through your public statements?
Senator, I very much appreciate that question. I recognize the concern. I deeply regret and apologize for my language and some of my past language.
Okay, so again, when she wasn't doing those tweets, she was viciously attacking Bernie Sanders supporters. So let's acknowledge that. That said, JR, some of those are pretty funny because Susan Collins is 100% the worst. Ted Cruz does suck, and the vampire stuff was good.
Voldemort.
Those were her best. That's the best stuff she ever produced, right there.
Honestly, the Republicans need to stop pointing it out because those are the things that make me want her to get in. I'm messing around. So in reality, those are the things that she said, which loads and loads of other people said on Twitter. It's Twitter. because they can't, again, they can't focus on her policy. They can't focus on her approach, the way she would handle OMB. It's just, you can't do that, because then you'll start shooting yourself in the foot, because that's where they agree with her on. They have to go with the other stuff. And this is all they got. And then sometimes when you hear it, I'm sure a large majority of people will hear that and go, okay. Because everyone doesn't watch those hearings that closely. They just watch their Fox Newses and their CNNs and find out what was said. And then what they'll give them is a quick little wrap up of what was said. Instead of us hearing him act like he's offended by those very, very tame tweets about calling people names. And how do you plan on mending fences? You know the way you answer that question? I don't plan on mending fences, because you guys won't accept it anyway. So let's just go forward with what we're going to do. Did it help that you said, I appreciate that question, Senator.
Yeah.
And in fact, I profusely apologize for those words. Did it work?
No.
Just stick with who you were going to be.
Because they don't care. Yeah, nobody's thinking in America. Nobody's like, I have positions that I hold, but I am always willing to update them with new information. There's like one grad student that thinks that way, and that's about it for America. No senator certainly is getting in there with that sort of view. Anyway, okay, let's jump into our next story. I just want to briefly acknowledge there is some concern in the audience. There was a tweet, hashtag TDR Live, Papa G says, JR Jackson selling out to the corporate machine, hashtag Pop Tarts. So just wanted to put that out there. We're gonna look into it. Liberal Snowflake says, you guys remind me to eat. And Gabby called me the Pop-Tart sommelier. So anyway, that's a position coming to a really cheap restaurant near you. Anyway, with that, let's jump back into this thing. Republicans are engaged in a war, and that war is on American democracy. Now, usually they try to hide why they're doing the things they're doing. For instance, the hundreds of bills that have been introduced so far this year to restrict voting rights. They say it's for like voting security, you know, like cutting 1 hour off of early voting days for security or whatever. But sometimes they're very honest, and we had an instance of that this week. So, asked by right-wing Supreme Court Justice Amy Coney Barrett to explain the Arizona GOP's interest in upholding a state law that disqualifies ballots cast in the wrong precinct, a restriction that Voting Rights Act advocates say discriminates against people of color, an assessment backed up last year by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, Republican lawyer Michael Carvin said this. Take a listen.
I'm interested in knowing why the RNC is in the case. So, you know, the DNC had standing, and the district court said that it had standing to challenge the out-of-precinct policy because the policy placed a greater imperative on Democratic organizations to educate their voters, and because the policy harmed its members who would have voted out-of-precinct. What's the interest of the Arizona RNC here in keeping, say, the out-of-precinct ballot disqualification rules on the books?
Because it puts us at a competitive disadvantage relative to Democrats. Politics is a zero-sum game.
And sometimes a zero-brains game, because he just admitted, no, we want this law to stay because it stops those people from voting, and that gives us a better chance of winning. That's their lawyer that said that, JR. Just admit it.
They've been saying it for years, decades. Mm-hmm. Every time there's a disadvantage for their voting, they push back against it, or a disadvantage for only allowing people that can vote that will help them. It always started with, you know, the rich landowning white males. Every time a level of people were allowed to vote, there was pushback from the people who were already allowed to vote. So women getting a chance to vote. Oh no, women are supposed to be in the house. What's wrong with you guys? They don't have fully functioning brains. They don't really live in the real world. They take care of children and they cook and they clean. How can they vote for a politician? They're too stupid. Hey, when black folks get an opportunity to vote, hey, they're too dumb. You know that they don't have fully functioning brains. We just realize they're full human beings, but we're still not sure yet. They don't deserve those same rights. It's always the way it's been. And then after you lose the battle of whether or not they're human enough to vote, then you have to start doing it behind the scenes like this.
Yep.
And it's always been the case. The more and more people get to vote, the fewer and fewer people that have traditionally been in power get to stay in power. And guess what people in power want to do? Stay in power.
Yep.
So it's gotten to the point where they just say it out loud because they're not really sure how else to say it. They've tried many other ways and it easily gets debunked and exposed. So now just say it. Paul Weyrich, I think I say it every time. 1980, 1979, 1980. I think it was at the RNC or something. It was a huge Republican event.
Some big thing, yeah.
I don't want, it was maybe it was a political a speech for a particular group. I always forget where it was. I don't want people to vote, Paul Weyrich. Head of a big portion of the Republican Party. I don't want people to vote. The fewer people vote, the more we win. It's just the way it is. That's the way it's always been. So, I mean, you know, the only difference is people willing to pay attention to this and understanding everything they do is based on making sure that fewer people vote. That's why Mike Pence just came out of the woodworks just to write an op-ed about how horrible the election was that led to the insurrection, the talk like this that led to insurrection that was looking to get him killed. The only thing more important than his life is preserving the Republican mantra that elections need to be narrowed down to just a few people that will vote for us. That's what Mike Pence is concerned about, not his life. This is the most important thing to the Republican Party because it's how they stay in power.
Yeah, I think like they've been, you know, viciously opposed to people voting for a very long time. But one of two things is happening. Either the Republican base is becoming more comfortable with just out and out, just saying we don't want democracy, we don't want people voting. Like you can restrict rights, even if it restricts minds, I don't care, as long as the end result is more Republicans, or Republican elected officials are just getting that the base already believed that. I would say it's probably a combination of the two, because they can just freely say it. They can do bills that are far more expansive in restricting voting rights. They can make, it's one of the only policy areas they talk about is voter ID and things like that, because they know their base is okay with it. They don't need to trick their base into supporting an anti-democratic party. Their base isn't interested in democracy. They want continued white supremacist domination of American politics, society, and the economy, and they will support the party that will do that.
Yep.
If that party stops some voting, so what? They're mostly stopping non-white voting. So I don't know. I think either they're more in line than they used to be, or the politicians are just getting that they always were in line.
Apologies for botching the statement. I looked it up. Paul Weyrich in 1980, head of the Heritage Foundation. He's one of the founders. I don't want everybody to vote. As a matter of fact, our leverage, speaking to Republicans, our leverage in the elections quite candidly goes up as the voting populace goes down. So if the head of this organization says we want the voting populace to go down for us to win more, what makes you think that they don't follow that?
Yep.
It was just said in jest.
Yeah, and super fast to give you an idea of the particular thing that's under debate right now at the Supreme Court is effectively if you vote in the wrong precinct, they're gonna throw out your vote. Are you legally allowed to vote? Sure. Are you supposed to have rights to vote? Sure. Is there any philosophical reason why we shouldn't just apply your vote to the right precinct? No, but it's a convenient way to get rid of some types of voting. And what types of voting? Well, in 2016, for example, the rate of out of precinct voting in Pima County was 150% higher for Hispanics, 80% higher for Blacks, and 74% higher for Native Americans than for white voters. Across the state, racial minorities voted out of precinct at twice the rates of whites. So if you ban it, will you ban some white conservative voters? Sure. But for every one you do there, you'll ban 1.52 non-white voters. Yep. And that is the democratic math that they're interested in and nothing else.
Absolutely.
Now, we have only moments left, so let's roll directly into this last story. It should be a brief one. Just wanna put a little pin on a story we talked about earlier. So I know that was a quick transition, my apologies. Oh, no, sorry. The E block. That's my mistake, probably. There we go, thanks. You remember right around the time of the inauguration when Kayleigh McEnany, as part of leaving the White House, had to do a financial disclosure and it showed that she was gonna start working with Fox News, which seemed like the most obvious thing in the world. And then they like acted like that wasn't the case with headlines like it was paused. Sure, we'd been talking, but then it was paused. But they did say at the time, the network remains open to hiring her in the future, however, given it does not condone cancel culture. What does that have to do with cancel culture? Who knows, but everything does. Well, what do you know? Fast forward a few weeks and they tweeted former White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany joins the Fox News family. Because of course she was going to. It's the most obvious thing in the world. JR, why do the little song and dance and pretend like you're not going to pay her to lie for you in the same way that she was doing basically for free while she's being paid for Trump? It's the same lies.
It's weird. It's like maybe it's some legal thing with before the right time. You can't, maybe some contract was ending before the next one was starting. And that's the only thing I could come up with. Or they want to continue this facade that this wasn't the process. Because Kayleigh McEnany has been auditioning for this role for years before she became a White House press secretary. And they went through the three or four others before her. She was on CNN. Auditioning for the position of White House press secretary when she got the attention of Donald Trump on Twitter and he goes, look at this insane person on CNN arguing my point of view and getting embarrassed every time she does, because she did, getting embarrassed every time she does. I love it because the previous administration had no connection to principle, which most of the Republican Party is on right now. You don't need principle, you just need to say the right things in the moment to help us pursue this ridiculous and horrific policy that we're pushing. That's all she was doing. Yeah. She auditioned, won the role of White House press secretary. While the White House press secretary, she won the role of a Fox contributor. More money. Yep. That's all it is. You notice how many Republican politicians are kind of eking over into Fox to become like to become hosts and analysts and all that stuff. It happens on CNN, it happens on MSNBC. Politicians do that. So they want to make sure they're in the right position to not be too toxic for the audience that they want to go and become an analyst for. This is a career move. Zero principle goes into this. It just goes to saying the right things long enough to get the job. Last thing. So while Americans are fighting about policy and agenda and which way the administration is going to go to help their lives, these folks are on the side using that same discussion, serious discussion, to get a job to continue to lie for the other side because it's worthwhile for their livelihood. That's all this is. And it's disgusting, man. One side is serious and the other side is just trying to get a job.
Yeah, there's no like that. She'll go like today. I'm sure she'll be talking about how Dr. Seuss was canceled. Like she'll say whatever you want her to say as long as she gets a paycheck, like whatever. And from Fox's point of view, she's associated with Trump. We need to desperately reassure our viewers that we still have Trump's back. So we'll bring on this known liar because what's the difference? Like, I don't know. And honestly, I know some of like some right wingers might be like, ha ha, you libs didn't want her to get on Fox and now she is. So suck it, libs. No. This is actually, I think, the best possible outcome because there were only three, maybe four outcomes. One outcome was she would have gone for OAN or Newsmax, but they wouldn't pay her enough. So I never considered that seriously. The only other two outcomes were her being hired by CNN or MSNBC. And given the choice between those and Fox, I'd rather her lie to Republicans than lying to centrists who watch those networks. So I'm perfectly fine with this. Yeah. And honestly, at this point, it's not like anyone's tuning into Fox News thinking they're getting the truth. They deserve Kayleigh McEnany. This is who they should be listening to.
Well, we've seen what happens when someone on Fox News starts saying something that is anywhere near reality. They got mad at Chris Wallace because every once in a while he says, hey, so that doesn't make any sense. You know what actually happened in this particular situation? Republicans are at fault. If he says it, they go, what's wrong with Chris Wallace? How dare he's on my channel? Mm-hmm. It's not about getting the reality. It's about getting reinforced the lies that you were told before so you can continue to sit in your bubble and believe the nonsense that you were told. That's what the audience is there for.
100%. Well, JR, unfortunately, we are out of time, but thank you so much for joining us. Always good to have you on.
Yeah, it's fun times. And I didn't get to finish my Pop-Tarts because you guys shame me too much. We're going to get back to this. I couldn't wait. I've been sitting in front of this whole time. I've been looking at it. Every time I talk, I'm like, Pop-Tarts.
My God. Anyway, thank you. Stay safe out there, aside from the damage that the Pop-Tarts are doing to you. New Representative Madison Cawthorn is facing multiple credible accusations of sexual harassment, and it's not currently something that the Republican Party seems to give a damn about, but we're pretty consistent on that, so we're going to talk about it again. And this time we're bringing in a guest. Very excited to welcome to the show the Director of Communications for Ultraviolet, as well as the host of There Are No Girls on the Internet, Bridget Todd. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Great to have you on. And there had already been information about Madison Cawthorn and the variety of things he had done before becoming a representative. More allegations are coming out. You know, for the purposes of those in our audience who might not be familiar with them, if you could just say a little bit about what's been alleged and what your reaction to the entire thing is.
Well, what's been alleged is a really troubling pattern of disrespectful, sexist behavior, sexual harassment from multiple women. BuzzFeed spoke with more than 30 people and described, you know, different women coming forward with their stories of misogynistic, aggressive, predatory behavior toward him. And, you know, calling women slutty, saying, asking them inappropriate questions about their sex lives, grabbing their thighs and forcing them to sit in his lap, just really gross stuff. And I want to make it very clear, this is a troubling pattern. He should definitely resign. There should be an independent investigation. And this kind of behavior shouldn't be tolerated. I'm not even surprised to find out that someone who visited Hitler's vacation home when he had a vacation time would turn out to be kind of a horrible person. So really not super surprising, but definitely troubling.
Yeah, and sometimes when things like this happen, they'll hide behind, well, these allegations are about things that happened a billion years ago. But one of the consequences of being one of the youngest people ever elected to Congress is, I mean, what did this happen? Like a year before he started planning his run? Like this is pretty current stuff we're talking about.
Yeah, it's not like people are going back to his childhood behavior. He's a young person. This was not that long ago. And I think it's completely appropriate to be asking, you know, is this someone who is fit to lead and fit to serve? And I would say, no, it's not.
So what would you and your organization like to see happen in this area?
We would like him to step down. We would like people to loudly disavow him. And we would like there to be an investigation into his behavior. You know, and I also just want to make something else very clear. You know, we know that Donald Trump did not invent, or he wasn't the first person to sort of champion this kind of sexist, misogynistic behavior. But I do think he showed the Republican Party that, hey, maybe it's possible that you could be elected, not just in spite of this kind of behavior, but because of it. And so I think that the Republican Party really has some troubling stuff to contend with. And we think that absolutely there should be an investigation.
And as of right now, do you expect that that's likely to happen?
No. I mean, you said it yourself. There's been almost no Republican outcry on this issue. And so I don't think we'll see an investigation.
You know, and I'm glad that you brought up Donald Trump, because a lot of what he did was not totally new. It was just a little bit more brazen, a little bit more exaggerated. The Republican, like politicians in general, have been loath to apologize or step down for virtually anything for a long time. Republicans slightly more so. You've occasionally gotten a Democrat to step down for something related to sexual harassment or sexual assault. Yeah, with Madison Cawthorn, it seems like they seem to like this. And when the most recent accusations came out, the statement that his campaign put out was, after this had already been out, the voters delivered him a win by 13 points, which to me is not actually a response to the substance of the allegations, but it does really give you a view as to what lens they look at this sort of material through.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very telling that that's the statement they put out. I don't think that, you know, you can't shame someone who doesn't have shame. I don't think that he is ashamed of this behavior. And I think that they are challenging voters and saying, hey, it doesn't seem like voters have a problem with this. But I would actually counter that most people would find this kind of behavior abhorrent and agree that it has no place in our elected officials.
You know, I want to believe that, but they did elect him. The Trump fans don't seem to have been bothered by not just like an accusation, but like Trump had a good portion of a Cosby number of accusations. Like you always assumed with some people, okay, they're really powerful. One accusation, two isn't gonna do it. But once you hit the dozens, it should matter, but it didn't seem to. And I wonder, like I'm glad that you and your organization are calling for him to step down. I think that there should be accountability as well. But do we potentially have to come to grips with enough voters in certain red districts just don't care about racism? They don't care about misogyny or harassment. Like, is it possible that the country in some areas just isn't what we think it should be?
I mean, it's a great question. I do think that we need to have some kind of a national reckoning and dialogue about what is and is not appropriate for elected officials. It's disappointing, you know, to see so many people rally behind people who have been credibly accused of sexual assault, sexual misconduct, sexual harassment, racist behavior, you know, not allegations, but, you know, going on television and saying racist things from their mouth. You know, it is troubling to think that a big portion of our country would not be moved by that, not be bothered by that, would happily elect that and vote for that. But I just think it goes to show that we are long overdue to have some kind of a national dialogue around what kind of behavior is and is not appropriate for someone who's an elected official.
Exactly. I think that's a great idea. And in terms of bad behavior, that actually brings up our second topic. The Republican Party is obsessed lately with a few different things. Conspiracy theories about the election is probably the biggest one, but the trans community is probably number two. For some reason, and perhaps myself and our guest today, Bridget Todd, can debate, they have become just, they cannot stop talking about the trans community, both elected Republicans, their online figures, hosts on Fox News, just talk about this community constantly and never from a point of view of either understanding or an interest in ever generating any understanding about what the trans life experience is actually like. Bridget, what do you think? As I know you've been talking about this recently in your podcast, what is this about and where has this come from?
Well, I think it's the fact that the Republican Party doesn't really have much to offer voters other than transphobia and stunts. And, you know, people can't eat stunts. People can't pay their bills with transphobic stunts like Marjorie Taylor Greene likes to pull. You know, I think really this is a party that has given up even the pretense of being interested in actual governing. You know, and I also think we need to be very clear that the trans community is suffering right now. You know, 2021 is already shaping up to be a deadly year for the trans community. And I think especially going after trans kids, using these scaremonger tactics like, oh, trans kids in sports, bathroom bills. You know, that really is an attempt to criminalize the trans experience in this country because people have nothing else to offer them. They have nothing else to offer the American people other than these kinds of stunts. And honestly, it's really sad to see, you know, the trans community, particularly children, are already so marginalized. To continue to bully them to score political points really just shows you the kind of bullies that we're dealing with.
You know, I'm predisposed to believe much of what you said, if not all of it, but I do occasionally like to play devil's advocate. So is it possible that this is just the latest in a long line of instances where Republicans have been very devoted to the cause of women's sports? Is it possible that that is just what they're really interested in here?
I mean, if that were true, I would like to see the Republican Party really crack down on the kind of predatory coaches that we see in sports. And those are not trans folks, right? Those are cis men. And so if that were true, we have documented predators in who are preying on girls in women's sports. So I would love to see them focus their attentions toward that if that were really the case. And furthermore, there is not any evidence that trans people in sports are dominating college sports or children's athletics. There's just not any evidence. It's completely a made up fabricated problem when an actual threat to girls in sports actually exists already. So if these Republicans are really so, you know, concerned about it, the threat is right there. They should go after them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. We were talking about it recently on our show that this is like, so Marjorie Greene, what does she care about? Well, to hear her tell it, she cares about the threat coming from to female sports, and she believes in the QAnon stuff, which is about some sort of international cabal of pedophiles and child eaters. And yet, like the gymnastics coach just committed suicide after he was facing. She's not interested in that at all. Like an actual pedophile in women's sports. Ho hum, not interested. You could at least pretend to care about the things you say you care about.
Well, I mean, that wouldn't lend itself to a big grandstanding stunt, right? Like she couldn't put a sign out front of her office that was, you know, blasting that kind of thing. It doesn't lend itself to the kind of stunts that we know that she has to offer the American people. And, you know, people can't pay their rent with stunts, Marjorie.
You know, one theory that I have, and I'm curious what you think about it, is that for a very long time, the right and the Republican Party, Republican politicians demonized gay Americans. And I wonder if they feel like that's a little bit harder to get away with now, but that maybe they can sort of get away with it by just moving to the trans community, that they're a little bit less protected, a little bit less accepted. So we can do all of the same stuff about these people are coming for your kids and all of that stuff and maybe get away with it. Does that seem maybe accurate, or do you think there's something deeper there?
That's accurate. And again, it just shows you how low they'll stoop because, you know, trans folks, it's trans folks are already marginalized in our society. So to paint them out like they're, you know, this big bad villain, it just goes to show that these people are bullies. I completely agree that, you know, we had a culture shift around gay folks in this country and queer folks in this country. I think that shift has been slower to impact the trans community, much slower than I would like, you know. And I think that people who are out there to demonize folks like the trans community see that and they think, oh, maybe I can use them to scapegoat them to distract from the fact that I have nothing to offer people in terms of actual substance and governing.
You know, actually, I want to talk about part of the fact that the trans community in particular is not thought of in the same way, given the same consideration. We've been talking about Marjorie Greene and her transphobia. And so there was this interaction that she had about a week ago with Representative Marie Newman, where Marie Newman put up the trans flag. And then Marjorie Greene put up a sign attacking either the entire trans community or maybe just in particular Marie Newman's trans daughter. It's not entirely clear, maybe both. And I believe it was Facebook took down the flag, but not this sign. They say that this was just an accident. But what would you like to see done in regards to social media accountability in the area of transphobic attacks like this?
I mean, I think Facebook can say this was just a mistake all they want. It's been very clear. Facebook has a really long documented history of amplifying, spreading, and protecting, in the case of Alex Jones, this kind of content. Hate speech, transphobic content, conspiracy theories, disinformation that is based in people's identity, attacks on who people are. Facebook has a documented history of amplifying and protecting this kind of content. So they can say this was a mistake. I absolutely do not believe it was a mistake because they have this history. And I would like to see some real accountability at Facebook. For so long, all we hear from Facebook is excuses. They blame content moderators. They blame this, they blame that. When do we actually get accountability? If I was this bad at doing my job, you know I would be fired, right? So yeah. I want real accountability, not excuses.
Yeah. You know, I really appreciate you joining us, giving us your perspective on these topics. We've mentioned your podcast, There Are No Girls on the Internet. For people who might not be familiar with it yet, where can they listen to it and what do you talk about on it?
Well, you can find us on the iHeartRadio network. You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. And really, it's the kind of conversations that you've raised today, the intersections of underrepresented identities like queer folks, black folks, women, and the internet and how we show up or do not show up in those spaces. So please check it out.
Bridget Todd, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.